You're listening to The Back 40, the podcast for Ontario farmers, covering topics and issues that matter most to Ontario agriculture. Brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm the host of The Back 40, Mike Brine, agribusiness specialist at Trillium Mutual Insurance. Farmers are noted for always trying something new and always looking for the latest new thing to try on their farms. Much of that innovation starts with people outside of the farmers, sometimes from businesses that have an idea that are trying a new product. Many of these businesses wouldn't survive if they didn't have a little bit of outside help. We're talking today with Joe Dales from the RH Accelerator. We're going to talk a bit about innovation and new business and how we support it. Joe, welcome to the Back 40.
Happy to be here and big fan of these podcasts. So thanks for having me.
Let's start with, we're going to talk about the RH Accelerator. So tell us, what is the RH Accelerator?
About 3 years ago, two good friends of mine who are successful tech entrepreneurs and myself came together and we saw an opportunity where early stage companies were having trouble getting financing and support. You know, we formed a company called RH Accelerator that basically makes investments that are very patient and hands-on so that we can help these early stage innovative companies scale and grow. And what we end up bringing them is our expertise, our networks, which are valuable, and some access to capital, and just help them mature up. And then they're ready for either getting lots of customers, or if they need extra financing, they're in a position to talk to the next round of venture capitalists or early stage private equity firms. So that's basically what we do, is we're patient, long-term, hands-on investors in innovative ag tech companies.
So who exactly are you aiming this at? You say innovative ag tech companies. Who does that include?
Maybe I'll take you back a little bit and tell a story so that it makes a little bit of sense. So about 25-ish years ago, I thought, you know, I'd like to be an entrepreneur. I'd worked in agribusiness the first part of my career. I met four students and a prof at the University of Guelph that were building these things called websites. And I thought, hey, this internet thing has great potential for agriculture. You know, we started what's become farms.com. But in those really early days, there was people like Ginty Jokius, who started Canada's Outdoor Farm Show, and Grant Robinson, an accountant in Guelph, that pulled together resources and mentored us, helped us get started. And so it's almost the farming tradition, a lot of help for new farmers and early stage technology companies. We wanted to continue that tradition and, you know, and help start and support the next bunch of great companies that will emerge in the region here. The target is young entrepreneurs that have an idea or they want to bring a technology to the agriculture and food market, that they need support, they need contacts, they need experience. And so we bring those resources and wrap around them so that they have a higher probability of success. Not everything will work, but it's really an investment in the next generation of young entrepreneurs.
You're getting them in contact with people that have funding. Is this all private funding that's looking after supporting these entrepreneurs?
There's a range. There's a lot of grants in the marketplace that will support innovation. So we encourage them to get some of those. And a lot of times they'll apply for them. It could be angels, it could be customers, it could be a whole bunch of people. And it's hard to get your first investor if you've never done it before. You don't have any reputation. You've just never done it. It's much easier if some of our founders can say, hey, we're working with Joe and RHA, and they know we've helped get them ready for that next round of financing. So for them to do well, it's probably going to be, private money to get going, that, and smart money, you know, people that are interested in investing in innovation and tech. So that's the ecosystem we're trying to build out, make sure that people know each other and they're watching for a while too, before they have to make the investment. So it's a lot about relationships. It's a lot about showing progress.
Now, other than outside of the funding, outside of the money, what sort of services do you find these people need when they start out? Obviously, there's advice that's required there. You mentioned a little bit about the grant money that is available there, and many of them may not even be aware of that and certainly hadn't thought of that. What other types of help do they get?
When they're a young founder and maybe they have two or three staff, they pretty much need everything, right? They've never done it before. We try to customize what they need. So First thing is to get to know the founders, do a real deep dive, you know, find out where their strengths are. Some of them are tech founders. They don't have much business training, so we can bring them up to speed on the business side of things. For instance, one of our really successful stories is we got a call from a young tech founder, and his business was going viral. It was picking up customers. You know, he called and said, hey, can you help me? So we got in there. We saw what was going on. He needed some customer service people, so we helped him hire a couple people. He needed some more tech support, so we helped him hire a couple of programmers and just shored his business model up. And so he was able to grow. And then about a year later, he had a company out of the US make him an offer to acquire him. And so we were able to, you know, help him get really good financial advisors, good legal advice. And then because we've had experience with exits, helped him with his understanding the term sheet and finally closing the deal. And he's still working for that company. And then he in turn took some of that money and invested back in RHA because he wanted to help the next guy. Really every day we do creative problem solving, and it stretches us all with our experience. Between the bunch of our advisors, we've seen a lot of things. So not much surprises, but we learn something every day. But if you go back to the basic principles of business, you can usually sort through what needs to be done.
So what stage of development would most people come to you in? Are they coming that they just have an idea, they have a prototype? You mentioned there that he had a business model, but you helped him shore it up. Where do you see the majority of the people coming to you?
That's a really good question. A lot of people will come to us with a basic idea, and we'll just tell them, hey, you know, we come in when you've got proof of concept, when you have 200,000-300,000 of real sales with customers, and, you know, we'll help scale you up. If you have an idea, we'll often keep in touch, keep an eye on the people, because, you know, all they need is a few customers to really get rolling. So that means a number of clients, real clients paying for it. And then what we want to do is just help them add, you know, 100 more clients or 1,000 more clients and really start getting the cash flowing and the business rolling.
So not necessarily in that stage where we're really profitable, but in that stage, we're already well on the way to having a viable business going.
Yeah, so they need to manage their cash flow. They're probably not going to be too profitable because they should be pouring it all back into growth. And how do we get the next 100 clients, especially if they're software and technology driven? And usually the first product needs to be re-engineered, you know, and to grow, you just keep pouring that cash flow back into the business. So we're not too concerned about profitability. It's all about growing the business, growing the value of the shares.
What types of innovations are you seeing here? Is it mostly a software type, or is it an actual physical hands-on prototype that we're talking
about? Yeah, it kind of depends. We're pretty disciplined. We try to stay in real segments that we know well. So in agri-food, we'll see tangible products. Somebody will invent a new product, a new drink, a new beverage, a new something. I heard a pitch from an Israeli company, and they are growing grasshoppers for protein. Every day is kind of interesting. A lot of the ones that we're looking at are software technology. A company like Intelliculture is basically a software analytical play for farm equipment. I know you interviewed Cole a few weeks ago, and that's one that we really like. And it's a high growth company out of the University of Waterloo. We're working with Chuck Barisic at Hagerty Agrobotics. He's trying to bring agrobotics to Canadian farmers. And so he's been bringing technology from around the world, robots that, you know, can do weeding, can spread fertilizer, can do a whole bunch of things. He's really innovating out there. So it's a wide range of things. My partner founders and I are pretty good with software and technology. So those are areas that, you know, we have strength and experience in. So we're comfortable in those areas.
I want to switch the conversation a little bit away from the accelerator here, and I want to focus a little bit more on types of innovations and things that we're seeing in the industry. And you're in a unique position here of being involved with this stuff. I'm going to ask you to gaze into your crystal ball at some point too. Mm-hmm. But what types of innovation are we looking at? You talked about robotics there. We've interviewed people that are heavily involved in developing these robotics. Where's that field going?
I think we're just in the first inning. You know, the technology for auto steer and things like that have been adopted, and we see those on most of the John Deere and Case and AGCO equipment. But now we're starting to see the next generation. Software is making a difference. The Internet of Things, cellular and satellite connections have never been stronger, and all those infrastructures are in place. And so as investment goes into the next generation of robots, I think they'll take away a lot of the dirty, manual, repetitive jobs that none of us like to do. So weeding is an area that they're doing a lot of work. There's a group called Mycionics in Ontario that's building a mushroom picking robot. You know, anybody that's been in a mushroom house, those are tough manual jobs. And so if the robot can go in there and it can select all the mushrooms at the right size because it's got computer vision, just pick up and drop. So it seems like an easy robot to build, but immensely complicated because human body is a pretty tough robot to replicate. So those are the sort of things that I'm seeing that I'm really excited about. It's been a challenge for farmers to continue to get labor. And that's why I think we made the equipment larger and larger, because we only had so many operators. It'll be interesting to see in a few years what transformation comes to the ag equipment space. Won't be quick, but much like 100 years ago, if we popped my grandfather from the farm to my brother's farm, he'd be quite surprised, because I remember him telling us about, you know, horses and thrashing machines and things like that. So you'd see the John Deere combine that my brother uses and be quite surprised. So I wouldn't be surprised in 20 or 30 years, we might not recognize some of the equipment on the farm again.
It's quite amazing the changes that happen when you get something that's kind of revolutionary. My dad talked about change between horses and going to tractors. He told a story about my grandfather, who was really good with horses, not so much with an engine. My dad said he came to him and the tractor had no oil pressure on it. So had no oil in it, basically. And he's like, so can I just drive it up to the barn and get some oil for it? And dad's like, nope, you shut it off here. It wouldn't hurt just to go a little ways, would it? And he's like, no. He said, my grandfather was very hard on machinery. But if you think back to then and the difference between what we pulled with horses and what we pulled with tractors and how that's all changed, that equipment changed relatively drastically from what we were looking at with the horses to what we were looking at with the tractors, based on just how that power came to it. Right now, we're looking at a situation where we could see the same thing. Everybody thinks about the equipment being larger, but we can split it up. If we don't care whether we have an operator on every piece of equipment, we can go quite small with some of that.
I think it's going to be really interesting to see how these technologies are adopted and brought to the farmer and commercialized. And then once the farmer gets a hold of them too, they figure out, hey, this will do this job for me. It's going to be interesting to see how some of this technology, once the farmers get onto it, because farmers are the best innovators, right? They'll sort through what works and what doesn't. They'll adapt it and customize it for their own operations.
Give them a tool that'll do one job and they'll say, well, it could also do this and this and this. Absolutely. And I just need to change this to make it work there. I am fascinated by the area of robotics, and we're already seeing some autonomous tractors that people are playing around with. It's the small stuff that really fascinates me, the individual planting units that you can turn loose into a field and let them go do their thing wherever they go. Do you like what you're hearing from the Back 40? We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments and thoughts to theback40@trilliummutual.com or follow us on social media at Trillium Mutual.
Norbert Bourgeot invented the DOT system, which is now Raven OmniPower. And he told me that he runs a company called Seedmaster in Western Canada, and the equipment was getting larger and larger and heavier, all because of shortage of operators. And so he said, if we could create this robot that did it without the operator, I could make this so much lighter and so much smaller and so much more flexible. It's visionary guys like that who just, he's an engineer and a farmer and in Saskatchewan. And you know, he thought it up, and now he sold that business to Raven, and then Raven was acquired by Case. So it just shows how quickly this technology can come to the marketplace, especially when you've got big dollars behind it with some of these big companies. So I think that trend, smaller, more specialized equipment, will certainly happen in my mind.
What's the first area of farming do you think that'll take advantage of it? Is it the market garden and orchards and high value crops? Is that the natural fit for it to start?
There's a lot of interest in that because there's a lot of labor there. And so Chuck from Haggerty Ag Robotics had the Neo robot, there was a lot of interest from the high value added crops. So horticulture, so vegetables and berries and things like that. And so if you can get in there and do the weeding, eliminate some manual labor, I guess it would be organic if you didn't need to use crop protection products. So there's a lot of neat opportunities there that if once these systems are proven, that's probably the first place that we'll adopt because they're smaller acres, high labor component, and then the opportunity to market and value add to the crop. That's kind of where the innovators that want to try this and see if they can work it on their farm is likely first, as compared to the large acre row crops. I do think it will work on the row crops, but that might be a few years down the road.
Some of my neighbors that I talked to, I mean, if you came up with something, they'd be the first ones in line if they thought they could make it day, just because they like playing with that stuff. I had Russ Barker on talking about drones, and I asked him why. And he says, well, if I was younger, I probably would have been a pretty serious gamer. And there's lots of guys out there that will try this just because it's kind of neat, it's kind of fun. And yeah. I don't care whether it on this small acreage makes money, but I'm really interested to see what I can do with it.
Yeah, and the drones are another interesting platform that we haven't quite figured out how to commercialize it, but, you know, started out with the cameras and the cameras are getting better. And then I'm seeing larger and larger drones where you can use them on different opportunities. So I do know in China and Japan and Australia, drones are used on, you know, things like the rice paddies because they're small fields, can't really get equipment in there. And, you know, they can go in and drop a little bit of fertilizer or whatever they need. Just because it's not working here doesn't mean that there's not, you know, considerable investment and development. And they may come back and be more commercially viable here in a few years. Interesting to see technology around the world. And that's where places like YouTube, now you can see what people around the world are doing. You know, and our farmers are pretty good at keeping an eye on all that tech from around the world and figuring out, will that work here in St. Mary's or not?
Hey, wait a minute. I could use that.
That's right. Well, that's kind of how it starts. Yeah. Right? You know, that's, you know, I am excited about all the tech entrepreneurs coming out of the universities now, talking about machine learning and artificial intelligence and, you know, software and sensors and the Internet of Things and robotics. How do we unlock their potential and their ideas? Pretty easy to get moving in the morning, right? When you meet these young, enthusiastic people, and we just try to support them to help our farmers. And then in turn, we're helping feed the world. Keeps our farmers competitive here at home as well.
You talked about lots of entrepreneurs that are working with software. What are we looking at in that field there? What types of innovations are there out there?
It could be a range of everything, but most farmers, this has become one of their most valuable tools on the farm now is their smartphones. And so everything from using the smartphone to detect problems keeps them in the loop. So I see software as a pretty important, it unlocks all the data and the equipment. It could be a satellite going over your farm. And I think software is going to be a big piece. It's just finding those specific challenges that the farmer's having and then develop a product and then getting the farmer comfortable enough to use it. You know, when we started farms.com, farmers didn't even have computers, let alone the internet. So that's risen up to here. And I think that trend's going to continue as they use more of the apps on their phone and track everything from precision agriculture to unlocking all the potential of their data. And especially in the US, all the carbon sequestration stuff. So if you have data on your farm and you can show, hey, we did this way, you know, there might be revenue streams there that open up. And, you know, everything's a quest for higher yields and more productivity too. So anytime you can save a dollar or make a dollar using the technology, farmers are usually pretty interested in understanding that.
Yeah, there's a certain point at which they look at this and say, okay, this has to be kind of a finished product before I can make it valuable on my own farm. I was at a conference a few years ago. A gentleman was talking about he was running a 300-acre farm that he was using as a paid research. People were paying him to do that research. And one of the comments that stuck with me there was, I've got lots of data. I'm collecting things, you know, soil moisture, the conductivity of the soil. He says, I got all sorts of that data. And he says, a lot of it, I don't know what to do with it. I don't know how it relates to crop yield or anything else yet. Managing that data, that's a lot where the software is going to be useful, isn't it?
Data is just the first step, right? Then it's polishing it up. And that's when you get, what do they say, knowledge and then wisdom. So we all have lots of data, but what's it telling us? You know, what changes? What can we actually execute on the farm? And we have looked at data a lot, especially in agriculture. You know, when you think of just even seed corn test plots. I know it's that time of year. So it helps make those decisions. I think the more data we have, if it's processed properly and digest it and spits out knowledge and things that you can actually make decisions on, then there's value there. And, you know, the farmers will figure it out. I'm pretty encouraged by what the potential of smartphones and data and machine learning and stuff like that is going to be as we keep investing into it.
The smartphone itself has made such a difference to how we manage things. I know a few years ago, one of my neighbors was down for Canada Day and he just put a robotic milker in. And I asked him how the cows were coming up. And he said, we got all but one. And he pulled out his phone and he says, she milked 13 minutes after I left. And it's like some of this stuff kind of blows your mind when you think about how much information we can get from our barns, from our fields. And it's all just in that one little computer that we call a phone.
Well, and it gave that farmer some freedom, right? You know, he wasn't worrying about it all day. He knew that something happened, and otherwise he would have had to truck back to the barn, right? And make sure that cow was okay. So those are those little productivity freedom gains that we have that you'd be doing something else. Yeah, it's pretty exciting, you know, all the technology. It's a bit overwhelming, and I encourage people, hey, don't be overwhelmed. Innovation is a bit of a mindset. Not everything's going to work. Just feel where your comfort zone is and adopt when you're comfortable, but always have your radar on that there's going to be all kinds of new tools that will help you save money and make money on your farm and be more productive and hopefully improve the operation.
So where do you see the RH Accelerator going in the future here? How big, how many more, what's coming down the pipe for you?
You know, we've got some pretty ambitious long-term goals. So we're continuing to look at companies. We've raised a small fund called 519 Growth Fund. So we've got funding for 25 or 30 more early stage tech companies, and we're just building out that ecosystem. So I would hope that in the next couple of years, you know, we've done about 20, 25 companies that we have investments in right now, hopefully double that in the next year or two. You know, we love what we do. We love working with these young founders, passionate about it. So, you know, hopefully have a bit of success and do some good.
This is a little bit of a change from where you originally started out. A lot of people will be familiar with you from farms.com. For you personally, what drives you on this? Yeah. What really drives you to this initiative?
That's a good one. My whole career has been in agriculture. I really love the sector. I like working with farmers, I like visiting farmers, I like chatting with them. I've realized that I'm pretty good at identifying opportunities. Not perfect, but I like looking at innovation. And so I try to bring innovation to farmers. And so, yeah, we did that with the internet and software and conferences. And then I continue to do that. And if farmers are successful, we're helping feed the world. So those are kind of my whys on what gets me moving in the morning and why I'm so passionate about meeting people and, you know, trying to connect the dots so that it can help move innovation along. And it's pretty easy to get moving in the morning and have fun and have a good day every day. So yeah, I feel really blessed.
It's going to be interesting to see some of these companies that you've worked with over the past couple of years and where they end up 10 and 15 years down the road.
The people are spectacular, so they're going to be successful. They may not be doing what they're doing now, but that's the neat thing about working with these young founders. Products can kind of come and go, but the talent, if we can unlock their potential, their talent, it'll be scary. So that's why I'm so excited about, you know, these younger people. What are they going to look like in 10 years or 20 years if they can, you know, make a few good decisions?
I'm thinking from the standpoint you talked about earlier, where John Deere and Case IH and AGCO are looking at a lot of these entrepreneurs and these new ideas. And when they get to a certain point, they'll say, okay, we'll buy that. And sometimes the people go to work for them. And other times they're like, okay, I'll work for a couple of years and then I'm a free agent again. Now this time I've got money and I've done it before and I got another idea. And that's that talent you're talking about, that some of these guys will be on their second and third projects 10 or 15 years down the road.
I think that's just us unlocking the potential and thinking globally, right? You know, hey, that's the one thing I've noticed. Our young farmers and our young agribusiness people and tech entrepreneurs, they're world class. They can go toe to toe with the Americans and the Dutch. And we're as smart, we work as hard. We just need to support them enough that we can unlock their potentials. I'm pretty excited about doing some of that. The whole ecosystem, you know, wants to as well. So that's the other thing. You know, we've been getting lots of good support from government, got lots of support from the universities and colleges like Fanshawe and Western and Niagara and Vineland Research. So there's enough resources here. We just need to execute and get stuff done, plan and execute and be creative. I'm pretty encouraged. I think there's enough momentum that we're going to do some really interesting things.
what would be your biggest limiting factor?
Probably time and resources. We just need time to help these companies mature and get moving. I think the other one is just a little bit more cultural. Maybe as Canadians, sometimes we're a little shy. We're a little, we lack confidence. You know, I see it in Waterloo, Ontario. I think we talked about this earlier, where the ecosystem there is really churning because they've seen BlackBerry, they've seen Shopify, they've seen all these tech companies, and people are raising money and starting these startups. And so the University of Waterloo's done a great job of that. I'd like to see that culture kind of permeate across agriculture for sure, and more of Canada. Success kind of gives people confidence to be successful themselves. So maybe it's a bit of culture, I guess, when I think about it, you know, us having enough confidence and not fearing failure, doing what farmers do, be optimistic. When you plant that seed, you're going to have a great crop.
Yeah, it's always amazing that you end up in a tough year that, you know, you haven't had good crops, you've had a tough harvest, and you know what? You're still making that seed order for the next year in December, and you're still planning on what you're going to do because next year is going to be great.
Farmers are great optimists. They use a lot of farmer analogies with a lot of our tech guys, right? You know, got to plant seed, you got to keep it weed free, you've got to fertilize it, you got to make sure there's water. You know, depending on the crop, sometimes it's an apple crop and it'll take you a number of years before you can harvest, right? So it's the same with these tech entrepreneurs. You got to be patient, persistent, and determined like farmers.
And not let setbacks get to you. You've got to find a way around them, because we know in farming there's setbacks. There's always the year where you get that bad crop that either you got too much rain or you didn't get enough rain or whatever. And this is no different here. It's not that linear progression. Sometimes there's a few pitfalls along the way.
Pain is part of the program, right? Yeah, absolutely.
That kind of makes us tougher though, right? That toughens you up for what's to come.
We have one young founder, his tech kind of blew up on him. He was having a rough day, and you know, my partners and I all took turns with him. And it's like, you know, we've all had these near-death experiences in our business, right? You know, those death blows and how you react to them. And we were all pretty confident. He was scared because, you know, his business was going to go poof. And we're like, you know, just work through it. And he did. He worked through it. And I know that gave him confidence for the next time, right? So yeah, you learn the longer you're in business that it's the same as farming. Oftentimes chat with my farmer friends and they've had a really rough year and then they kind of snap out of it. And it's very stressful. And I understand that. But they find ways of being that creative problem solver that overcomes the challenges. And you don't wish people to go through hard times, but, you know, hard times are part of the program. So it's just, what are you doing about it? And making sure you have a good network of friends and people you can talk to help you find those shoulders to cry on when you need it. I mean, we all need those.
Yeah. And that's part of your role there. A little bit of mentorship there. Hey, we've all been here. We've all had these days. We've all had these problems here, and put a plan together and work through it in a way and you'll get there.
Yeah.
If people want to find out more about RH Accelerator, how do they do that?
RHaccelerator.com. You can find us on Twitter and LinkedIn. We're happy to chat and connect. Appreciate the chat this morning. This was fun.
I've enjoyed it. Join us next time when our guest will be Randall Schwarzentruber from BinCentry. We'll be talking about a revolutionary new system that feed companies are using to improve their efficiency and make sure that farmers don't run out of feed. That's next time on The Back 40. We've been talking with Joe Dales from RH Accelerator on The Back 40.
We'll see you later. Take good care of yourself.
Yeah, you too.
You've been listening to The Back 40, brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance. Be sure to subscribe to The Back 40 wherever you find your favorite podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. The Back 40, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm Mike Brine. Until next time, take care and stay safe.